Consent calendar, and then I'll talk about all these items that are getting changed. Now, first of all, I think we do have a request from Commissioner Fish to pull item number 143 and place that on the regular agenda. Are there any other requests for changes to the consent calendar? If not, then Carl, let's take a vote on the balance of the consent calendar, please.
Fritz?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, now we have some time certains this morning, and we're going to get to the first one in a moment, but we have some other time certains that were on the calendar and now aren't going to happen. Item number 139, the presentation by Dr. Beatley is unfortunately not going to happen because he had to cancel his trip here and due to weather on the East Coast. So we will be removing item number 139 from the morning calendar. Item number 140, we're going to refer that back to my office because the District Council of Trade Unions did not ratify that collective bargaining agreement, tentative agreement. So unless there's any council objection, we will remove those two items from this morning's discussion and refer item 140 back to my office. Then on the regular agenda, Commissioner Fritz has requested that item number 150 be moved to February 19th. And Commissioner Novick has requested that items 151 and 152 be referred back to his office. So if I've captured all those, and unless there's any objection from the council, that's our revised calendar for this morning, which is, of course, now going to be a shorter calendar. But some of it remains, and item number 138 is before us now, and we're very happy about that. Carla, could you read item 138, please?
Partnership with Lines for Life to reduce suicide.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. Would you please come forward? So in 2012, the city entered into a partnership with Lines for Life, which was formerly known as Oregon Partnerships, to create a specific phone line for people struggling with mental health illnesses. And so we gave a grant to Lines for Life. And whenever we use public money for a specific purpose, I think it's really helpful to have a report on how did that go and what were the outcomes. And so I invited Judy Cushing, the former director of Lines for Life, to come and present to us this morning.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz, Mayor Hales, and members of the commission. I'd like to introduce others with me this morning. Our COO, David Westbrook, who a number of years ago was actually the Crisis Lines Director and came back to us more than a year ago as our COO. And I am thrilled to also introduce to you my successor, the CEO of Lines for Life, Dwight Holton, who will be speaking in just a minute. I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for her compassion and her stick-to-itiveness and her leadership to help the city provide this grant to Lions for Life. You've been a tremendous partner, Commissioner Fritz, and thank you. And to Commissioner Novick, who has played a significant role. And I'd like to begin this very brief presentation by sharing a story. It was 1:26 in the morning, and our crisis lines are 24/7. Our crisis response professional picked up the phone, and a young woman was on the other end of that line. She had been walking back and forth on the Vista Bridge. This is prior to the barriers being installed. And she saw the Portland number, a lifeline number, on the sign that says, "Let us help you cross this bridge." She was struggling. She was 4 days sober. She had had a breakup with her boyfriend. She was at the bottom. She just didn't want to go on any longer. She decided to climb up on the ledge of the bridge and swing her legs over the side. And she was sitting there and decided to call the number she remembered on the sign. That call rang into our call center. Our crisis worker picked up the line and listened to this young woman sobbing on the other end. She was so emotionally distraught and anxious, she just didn't think there was any reason to live. Our job on the line, our job on the suicide line, is to help callers find a reason to live rather than a reason to die. That night, on that phone, our crisis professional gently spoke with her. He listened. He helped her talk through her anxiety and her extreme emotional distress. He helped her begin to think about the reasons to live, what things were important to her, her family, other friends. And as he was talking to the caller, the young woman, our other team member called Emergency Medical Services here in Portland, who dispatched a team to go to the Vista Bridge. All of this was happening simultaneously, as it does when a call like this comes into our lines. Thank goodness for your police and your crisis response teams. They came there very, very quickly at that time in the morning. Our counselor was able to keep the young woman talking, able to nudge her to swing her legs back over the bridge, and he literally talked and walked her off that bridge to the arms of a Portland police officer, actually. And some of you know that we have worked very closely with Portland police to train them in suicide intervention skills and crisis intervention skills, particularly around suicide. That woman was taken immediately to the hospital and entered the psychiatric ward that evening. She was treated, she was helped. She called us 5 days later in the car with her parents and said, "Thank you for saving my life. I would have jumped if it hadn't been for you." The reason I'm sharing this story is that the numbers you're going to hear about data around suicide are grave and they're serious, but every single number represents a human life, and we so often forget that. Lions for Life is in the business of helping people who are severely mentally distressed, who have suicide ideation and/or addiction issues, often all three. We're a 20-plus-year-old organization, and as you know, one of the buckets of our services are the critical suicide intervention services. I'm sorry to share with you this morning on some slides that we live in a state that has a very, very high suicide rate. We rank 9th in the country. We have a 41% higher suicide rate than the rest of our nation. And you'll see some statistics around our crisis lines. A couple of things I want you to be aware of. You'll see the slide that has the Multnomah County callers on the Portland Lifeline, which is the lifeline you supported. Actually, that number is larger now. This was data taken it was September to September, so it's larger than this now. But I also, that's almost 300 calls, now well over 400. But I also want you to see the data from callers from Multnomah County, meaning Portlanders who live in Multnomah County, but also there's bleed over into Multnomah County residents because we can't track calls by zip codes. You'll see that number is over 4,000. 4,000 calls from the greater Portland area? I mean, that's a daunting and scary number. I want you to know that your investment in the Portland line is indicative of, and the larger number here is indicative of the problem. The reason the number is so small in the Portland line is that there's no advertising. The advertising is on a sign on the Vista Bridge. And so the National Suicide Lifeline number, which these other calls come into from Portland area residents, that number is advertised pretty aggressively through anything from NPR to television to phone books, et cetera. So we come to you today with not only a report of the importance of what you have allowed us to do and the Portland line itself, but the grave, grave need to help people who are severely, severely in distress. We just want to save lives, and that's our job. Dwight Holton is going to speak to you for a minute about kind of where we are, what we see going forward, and how we might be able to partner with the city in the future. I want to thank Commissioner Novick for his leadership on the barrier on the bridge. I know it's been a bit controversial or a lot controversial, but the fact is that if we can save one life, we can save many lives. and there were a record number of suicides in that bridge in 2013. Thank you for helping us save lives, Commissioner Novick.
Thank you, Judy.
I think the main thing I want to emphasize is some hard data on the results of our collaboration. During the period that we have worked together with the city, with the city funding around the Portland line, we've seen a dramatic increase in calls coming in from the Portland metro area on the two lines that reach us. And if you compare it statewide, you see the difference. Portland area calls went from 2,463 during the October 2011 to October 2012 period to 3,296, an increase of almost 30%. Whereas statewide, statewide suicide prevention line numbers went from 12,620 to 13,759, a little less than 9%. I think that collaboration is a key part of our ability and effectiveness in reaching that additional 800 people during that period, that significantly greater growth. And as Judy articulates so wonderfully, each of these, behind each of these numbers are people we're reaching. That's what we do. So we think the collaboration has been effective so far. We'd hope to build on the collaboration with you and work closely with you on a couple of different things. One would be looking at ways we can more effectively promote the Portland line. So far, it's really these 300 calls, the 296 calls, and I think it was close to 400 if you look at the calendar year last year, came almost exclusively from the number that's on the bridge, that's on the Vista Bridge. There's no other advertising about that we know of. There may have been some on transit, but we're not sure. We hadn't heard about it from y'all. I think there had been a plan to do promotion that we had not actually gotten done with the city yet. So one would be to look at efforts where we might do better promotion around that to reach more people. And the other would be ways to expand our crisis intervention efforts with the city. And I think the third is to look for opportunities for better collaboration with the county. We had I joined a meeting long before I was associated with the organization with Commissioner Novick back in the fall. There are real opportunities to collaborate better, I think, between the city and the county, and we'd like to be helpful in doing that.
Mr. Holton, following up on that, of course, the county has a mental health crisis line. You've got your line. This is purely anecdotal, but I've heard from somebody I know who sort of tested the lines that her experience was that actually, I don't know how she would have known this latter part, but I mean, maybe it's a combination of various conversations, was that sometimes it took longer for you guys to answer the phone because you have less staff. My impression is that once you do answer the phone, you're able to spend more time with people, or that's the way you operate, than the county does. And that sort of makes me wonder, how could you better collaborate and share resources?
Judy, do you want to address that?
Well, it's interesting. We have a small budget. We have two people working on our nighttime shift, and I believe, as does the county, our approach is just different. We're in the suicide intervention, crisis intervention business meeting. There isn't any timeline, and we, as I say, we have this incredible partnership with the Portland Police and our Project Respond, crisis response team. In fact, the person who runs our crisis lines used to run the crisis response team for Multnomah County for years. So we work hand in hand. We just have a different approach and are considered the experts, even across the country, in suicide intervention. So I think that there needs to be ways that we can partner more efficiently. I know David Westbrook can answer this better than I can because he's worked the lines and he's directed the lines for a long time. However, I think it's almost like having, if one number is advertised as the place to go for suicide intervention, you do that. That's the place to go for certain types of mental health crisis. So people who are in the Verity system, they should go through the Multnomah County system. But we're everybody. It's almost like our military line. We aren't just for the Oregon National Guard. We're for all services. So I think there should be a way we can collaborate there. And most of you know that we were in very, very dire financial straits last spring, we thought we were going to have to close the suicide line down, and the county stepped forward with a one-year grant that has allowed us to retain our 24-hour line. We get, you know, we get 17,000 calls a year on that line. I mean, and you can see that 4,000 of those are coming from Portland. So it's a critical, very critical, critical service. You want experts answering the line.
And Steve, Commissioner Novak, we'll share with you. We keep pretty careful track of wait time data, as well as there's a whole range of data that's really remarkable, I think. I would be interested to know. I'm not sure that the anecdotal evidence necessarily jives with the data as to around wait times.
We know
the other question is just about, on the subject of one line. I think that, having a distinction between a regular mental health crisis line and a suicide line, I don't know if that's ideal. I think that it would be nice if there was like one mental health crisis line, and maybe if it was like a serious suicide issue, then it would be passed on to you. If it's something else, it's passed on to other people at the county. I'm just rambling here.
Your idea of one line is right on, and I think other cities have one line. And I think there's a recent report out about somewhat of the fractured system of lines around Oregon. And that's a bigger problem that should be addressed. However, one of the things we would not urge you to do is to have multiple places for people to call who are in suicide crisis. Right. If they're holding a gun, if they're on a ledge, if they're on a bridge, you want one number for them to call to do that intervention right then. That young woman would have jumped if she had had to make two calls.
Judy, do we have any evidence that people are calling 211? We give that number out during emergencies. Mm-hmm. We say call 211. Are people calling 211 seeking these services?
I believe they do, and we are beginning to work closely with 211 to say the calls we get for food and shelter should be at 211, and crisis intervention calls should be with us. So yes,
I think we are now in the habit of using 211 as the clearinghouse for all kinds of emergencies, so mm-hmm. we may want to also be thinking about how we don't create confusion inadvertently by using 211,
mm-hmm.
and what happens if someone does call 211 and they're on the ledge. Are those calls routed in an effective way?
Right now, we don't have a way to warm transfer those calls. It would be or them to warm transfer them to us and vice versa. That would be ideal. Know that the people calling into the National Suicide Line, 1-800-SUICIDE or 1-800-273-TALK, are calling because they are in serious trouble. And those calls, we are the call center for the National Suicide Line. So that's what happens there. We could probably get you data around how many of the 211 refers to us, but the people have to hang up and call us, which isn't ideal.
And it's something we're working to address.
Other questions, Mr. Salzman?
Well, first of all, I want to thank Judy for your long, distinguished career on behalf of people in crisis, and welcome, Dwight. I seem to recall when I toured your facility that you also handle the Veterans Administration.
We do.
Crisis calls. Are you still doing that?
We are, and we're so proud to be doing that. We are the national backup center for the national VA line. We also have a dedicated military line for Oregonians, and we've received well over 15,000 calls since that line launched. When we have vets on the line, so it's a peer-to-peer line, and we're exceedingly proud of the work we're doing there. Also know that we've just trained beyond Portland Police, we've trained other police departments in the greater Portland area on dealing with veterans on the and working with veterans who are in crisis on the streets and need help rather than incarceration. They need other kinds of help, and we're very proud of that work.
And then I was just, you started out with some pretty sobering statistics about Oregon being the ninth highest state in terms of suicides. And I'm just wondering, you've been around this for your career. Is there a why? Why Oregon ranks
You know,
so
there's
high?
There's a confluence of ideas and interesting theories about that, none of them scientific. Lots of people want to talk about the weather, but Frank, to be honest with you, the western states, several of the western states have higher rates of suicide, and some of those states have much better weather than Oregon does. Minnesota has a high rate of suicide. I think that Oregon is a friendly place for people of all types, and we do our very best to serve people who are in mental health crisis and are homeless and need help. And that is a wonderful thing, but it's also challenging for those individuals who are struggling with psychosis and depression and mental illness and addiction. And so our mental health system needs to be as robust as it can be to serve these people. And that's part of our challenge here in Oregon.
And the Department of Justice, when I was in the United States Attorney's Office, launched an investigation into the statewide mental health system and reached an agreement short of litigation with the governor and the Department of Addictions and Mental Health. The first stage of that agreement was to take a look at data on exactly what's going on in with respect to the state's shifting from institutionalization to community-based care, how that's going, is it being funded adequately, et cetera. They recently issued an interim report about 2 weeks ago, I want to say, which I can forward to you if you haven't seen it already. And while it's completely clear that the state is utterly devoted to getting this right, it's also completely clear that we're not there yet. So one of the concerns raised was the fact that there are 47 separate crisis lines around the state. So I think the governor, I know from my conversations with him when I was United States Attorney, the governor is looking to the CCOs to help fix this, to help be a part of the solution. We're working closely with them on it. But I think that it's when you look at our suicide rate, our efforts to address our mental health system more broadly will help that. And in the interim and beyond, frankly, but in the interim especially, the need for the services that Lines for Life provides will be all the greater.
Explanations, am I correct that national statistics suggest there is some correlation between the availability of guns and the suicide rate?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Without a doubt.
Mr. Fish, did you have something?
There was one statistic here. I think I did the math. It's something like 36% of the calls came from people 46 and older.
Mm-hmm.
So could you shed some light on just the correlation between the calls and age?
David, do you want to address that?
Well, what I can say about that is, and I'll you'd be happy to send you a report for 2012 from the Public Health Department, but it did show that there's been a rise, particularly in that middle-aged age group, particularly of men, but also women as well. People frequently think about youth suicide. It's a very important topic to us. We run a youth line. And it's a leading cause of death for youth. However, the numbers are nowhere as great as middle to older aged individuals. Not very many things take the lives of young people. That's why you see it being the second leading cause, sometimes the first leading cause.
So one other factor here is that during the recession, we saw a tripling of our calls on our suicide line, and that age group continues to be the highest number of suicide, have the highest number of suicides. There were several precipitating factors that we looked at. One was unemployment. One was returning in Oregon, the National Guard members returning from the war. Also, the war itself precipitated some feelings among Vietnam vets and Gulf War vets about their guilt over having survived and brothers not and sisters not surviving, the economy, people losing their homes, people who had been middle class Americans all of a sudden finding themselves in serious financial distress, that also causing relationship distress. So it was like this snowball of things happening. And that particular age group, Commissioner Fish, seemed to be hit the hardest.
Well, it'd be interesting also to look at the extent to which social isolation is a contributor.
You know,
we, Commissioner Fritz runs our Parks Bureau, and we are committed as a community to making sure those doors are open to older adults. And we know that if older adults are isolated and don't have access to community centers, group activities, other kinds of things, it can lead to a whole host of bad outcomes. So thank you for your answer, and I want to join my friend Commissioner Saltzman in thanking you for your service and welcoming your successor. And we had a great relationship with Dwight as a counsel during some tough times when he was the U.S. attorney, and we have a lot of respect for him, and I think you made a great decision.
We are thrilled.
And I want to join my thanks to you, Judy, and that appreciation for Dwight. The partnership that you've built with the Police Bureau is really important that we continue that. We're learning from each other. There have been some spectacular successes here recently with our officers taking the help that you've given them and intervening in a thoughtful, sometimes even creative way, like going downstairs to get someone a sandwich so he'll come in off the ledge. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been some great success, but we still have a huge challenge. We lost 16 Portlanders last year to homicidal violence, 35 to motor vehicles, and 114 to suicide. So we have a lot of work to do together to keep trying to reduce that number because, as you say, each one of your calls, each one of those 911 calls that Chief Reese, who's here, and his team get is that moment of crisis, and we're handling them those crises better and better, but we need a lot less of them. So thanks.
Well, and, Mayor, you're raising, I think, a really important point. And part of why I've been so impressed with this organization when I was in the Department of Justice is that we focus today on one of the important components of Lines for Life, namely the crisis intervention component. But what I've always been impressed with is that the data and evidence and stories that come from the crisis intervention side of Lines for Life informs what they do on the prevention side. You know, when I was United States Attorney and when I was a prosecutor for 15 years, every story I ran into began with something, or nearly every story, that was preventable if we'd intervened in substance abuse or in family crisis or otherwise. And part of what I think Lines for Life is such a vital organization is it spans that gap from the crisis intervention to take what we learn there and apply it on the prevention side. And I look forward to collaborating with the city on that side of the organization as well.
Great.
I just want to put up the number. I don't know if our friends at Channel 30 can get to that, but it's 503-972-3456. 972-3456. And my understanding is that 98% of the calls that you get are resolved by your volunteers and staff, that you only have to call 911 in 2%. Is that still
correct?
Running the same? How many volunteers do you have?
We have 120 highly trained phone counselors. When I mention volunteers, sometimes volunteers to us are gold. We wouldn't be in existence without them. They're incredibly compassionate people. Every single volunteer goes through 60 hours of training and commits to 1 year on the line, 4 hours a week. Many of those volunteers stay longer because they simply love the work, and it's an environment where they know they're really, really helping people. We are ever so grateful, Commissioner Fritz, for our volunteers.
And I first learned about your organization and took a tour in 2009, right after the big freeze of 2008. And I said, well, what happened? You know, surely the volunteers didn't show up in the snowstorm, and not a single one missed a shift, is my understanding.
That's right.
So people can rely. If you wake up in the middle of the night and you're feeling awful and you're feeling suicidal, you can call that number, and somebody compassionate will answer. It's really important that we're talking about this issue. Part of the reason I think that we maybe have a higher suicide rate is that sometimes we think it's not polite to talk about how bad we're feeling, or you know, the Portland way is to suck it up. But that doesn't work, especially when you're suffering from a severe mental illness that needs medication as well as counseling. And this number is available not only for people who are feeling suicidal or for having other challenges, but for their supporters and their family members. So if you want to know how to talk to a family member who is feeling suicidal, you can call that number and people will help. Happy that you mentioned the teen line, because that was one of the things that I was most intrigued by, that you answered by text, that the volunteers there are peer-trained teenagers or young adults, and they're texting, which I think takes a particular skill.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. And then my final question is about funding. How much is government funding? How much is grants, and how much donations?
David, do you want to answer?
I would say roughly at the moment, and this, you know, it varies. We're always seeking grants. Roughly, I would say half of our current funding is government contracts, grants, et cetera. Obviously, there's a private donations. And then one of the efforts that we've been doing recently, and this is to ensure our sustainability, is to begin contracts with other nonprofits who serve folks with mental illnesses, mental health issues, to take on their after-hours calls. And so we've been doing that for about a year and a half now, and we're looking to continue to build that so that we're sustainable and so that we're not just reliant on grants.
And as you know, Judy is a force of nature. And when I come and look at the most daunting piece of what David's and my task will be going forward, it's continuing to build that kind of support. So we appreciate the city's partnership significantly.
And I add my thanks to Judy for your service. I was reading the wonderful article in the Oregonian profiling you and learned that you got involved as a Medford school mom because one of the kids was taking drugs. And it built from there, and now you're a national force on this. So I know that you won't be sailing off into the sunset and doing nothing. So I look forward to continuing to collaborate with you. One of the things that was supposed to be the finale of your service was the gala that was going to be happening on February 7th. Very glad that that's now been rescheduled for March 7th. And wondering if people are watching this presentation and thinking, how can I help? How can I become a volunteer? How can I donate? How can they find out more about Lines for Life?
They can call 503-244-5211, and our 15-year wonderful voice on the phone will pick up and get them to the right person. We welcome volunteers. We welcome people who may want to participate with us in other ways. And I do want to mention that our incredible team of volunteers, all of our volunteers are supervised by master's-level counselors who are on duty at all times, so multiple master's-level counselors. So in the crisis lines world across the United States, we're seen as a very robust call center, but also termed a hybrid model because we utilize volunteers with experienced master's-level counselors. So we thank you so much for this opportunity to serve the city of Portland and the citizens of Portland. We would welcome the opportunity to continue this partnership and appreciate your time this morning.
Judy, before you leave, I just want to thank you for your years of service, and thank you and David and the whole organization for working with us and providing amazing support on issues to do with the Vista Bridge, including at one point training volunteers who wanted to patrol the bridge before we had the barriers up. Thank you so much. Okay. And Dwight, welcome back to public service. I have nothing against Big Fat Law Firm. Some of my best friends work there, but I was rather curious as to how long you would last in a Big Fat Law Firm.
I'm happy to be back in public service.
Thank you all very much. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. And Judy, good luck, Godspeed, and thanks for all you've done.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's it.